So
the Jazz Shed is mobile. We're in San Diego, and I'm sitting down with Steph Johnson.
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you? Good to meet you, Keith.
Very well. I'm excited to be able to sit down with you.
I'm so honored that you wanted to come to my house and come do this.
I saw you play in San Diego maybe 3 years ago at Croce's, it was before Croce's shut down.
Yeah.
And my friend and I, who was also a bass player, we stopped in there, as we had a number of times, and you were playing. I'm like, wow, this Steph Johnson, she's really something. So I thought, next time I'm down, I got to just see if I can get an interview with her.
That's really
so,
nice.
So here
Thanks.
We are.
Cool. Thank you.
So tell me what's new.
In addition to, I just finished this album with Kamau Kenyatta, my producer, who produces Gregory Porter, who just won like his second Best Jazz Vocal Grammy, which is really exciting. So we finished this record. It came out last year. I had this big CD release concert. It was wonderful, and I had all these plans to go back out on the road with it. But I'm also an activist, and my friend Nina and I started a choir for people that are homeless in San Diego. And so the choir was, you know, slow go. You know, we were just down out in the streets, like meeting people, inviting them in. You know, a few people would join us. But then we got this national coverage. We got coverage with NPR, with our local NPR. And then the story went national at the end of last year. And it took over my life. I mean, in a good way. I mean, we started a shelter. We've successfully sheltered in their own housing about almost 17 people now. We're at the 17th person. We perform regularly. In March, we had like 18 performances or 17.
Wow.
It's turned into a nonprofit. I can't believe it. I mean, the whole thing started kind of out of me going out in the street and meeting people that were musicians. I met a lot of singers and musicians, and they'd say, well, what are you out here doing? You know, who are you? You know, kind of like, what's up with
you?
What
are you up to?
Yeah, and I said, well, I'm not with any church. I'm just a musician, you know, and I come, and they said, oh, you play music, so do I. So the fact that we met so many artists on the street, and knowing that when you're creative and you're expressing yourself, you're whatever you call God or the universe, you know, you're in a creative moment, and it's positive. It's a light feeling.
Yes.
And there needs to be some lightness downtown. I mean, people are literally dying. We have like the fourth largest homeless population. The choir started out of wanting to create a safe place and a safe haven for people to perform and to sing. And then also with the idea that maybe we could perform, and then I could speak. I could tell people in the audience what's going on. We had no idea that we would be booked. I mean, as soon as the thing went national, my phone like filled up and I couldn't even answer my phone. I got all these booking requests for the choir. So then
across the country?
We did get some people from Seattle contacted me, people in the Midwest, but mostly like local, you know, Southern California. And in fact, now we're actually expanding into Los Angeles. Los Angeles has like about 100,000 people that are homeless.
Like a second chapter?
A second chapter. We're starting like in September.
Hmm.
And through the library system there. They heard me perform and they found out about some of the songwriting workshops I teach in schools for, and also in libraries for disadvantaged, you know, youth, right?
Like, wow.
So that they picked up on some of the stuff I do in libraries, and then they heard about the choir. And so they actually are very proactive in their city, because they're just in any public places. That's where a lot of people that have no place to go, that's where they go and hang. So they actually have a lot of services in the library. So they're seeing it as a great additional, you know, we could start this chapter up there, which we're so excited about. But my life totally changed from it being, okay, let me book this tour and let me go here and let me go promote this record to, okay, I still want to do that, of course, but now we had all this booking requests for the choir. So we had immediately put together a show.
Right.
And get like a set together, which was like so opposite from all this woodshedding, right?
Yes,
and all this time incubating and working on your material.
Right.
So it was very like, the project with the choir really, I mean, it was like pulling me, you know, and I was just running to try to keep up with it because the demand and the interest and all that.
Right.
And we're constantly advocating. I mean, I go to city council like two or three times a month or something.
That's
so
great.
It's a lot of, we've led a march. We've, and we just finished filming a documentary with this really great filmmaker, Susan Poloschutz, who's made like six or seven documentaries for PBS.
Fantastic.
So the idea is that it will be pitched to PBS and be out next year.
That's
so
fantastic.
In less than a year.
Wow.
I mean, my life totally, I got rocked. I'm so grateful.
you're touching on a couple of subjects that I want to expand on, and I do want to get to what's next, mm-hmm. but I want to dive into some other cool. more musical things. And I'd like to hear about the music of the choir, but I think since that seems to be a really top priority right now, when we get to what's next, that might be a good opportunity to just talk a little yeah. more about the choir. But I'm really fascinated with your music as a singer and guitar player. And so I noticed a unique sound that you have, and I've listened to a lot of jazz. So when I hear somebody who I can't place, who doesn't sound like just a really good technician, who's just an amalgamation of a couple of
styles influences, sure.
Then I go, well, this is new. This is something new. So your playing caught my ear, and so you have a very unique sound, a very original sound, both in the notes that you play and the lines that you're singing, but the fact that you've got your singing and your guitar together, and in combination, it's even more unique. So you do have there are some influences in there. I can't necessarily say what they are, but I've heard you play some, you know, tunes that Wes Montgomery played, a little bit of Wes strumming in there.
Mm-hmm.
You've done an Al Green thing, and you've got a sort of a soul-inflected
mm-hmm.
sound and styling in your vocals, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really curious where your musical influences come from.
I grew up listening to Ray Charles, Stevie Wonder, Tina Turner, and then also like Joni Mitchell and Crosby, Stills, Nash, and you know, like my mom's in her late 50s, so she was playing like all this great, you know, really great music in the car. Yeah. That's all I heard. I mean, I honestly, it's kind of a joke, but I mean, I thought everybody sounded like Aretha Franklin. I thought, because all we listened to was soul music or really, really great singer-songwriters, you know, like James Taylor and stuff like that. Yeah. So I just thought all the singers had this really strong set of pipes. And then, but I didn't play music. I tried to play music when I was a kid and earlier. I didn't quite have the home conditions to practice all the time and a ride to practice and stuff. My mom's disabled, and we were on the poor side of the scene. So right. Everything was a scholarship if I got it, and there wasn't much consistency. So I felt like a failure when it came to music because I wasn't able to keep up with the kids around me. Mm. So I thought, well, I'm not supposed to play music. And it wasn't until I was about 21 that I got a guitar, and then I just was like, I'm just gonna like make up my own little jams. And what happened is I got this guitar. It was actually my dad's old acoustic Guild that I found in the garage, and I just sat in my bedroom, and somebody had shown me like a minor. Do you play any
a little trumpet and drums?
So yeah. like a minor 9 chord, like yeah, a little yeah. bossa groove thing, yeah. And I was like, I didn't want to play the triad. I didn't want to play like just an open E tuning. Sure, sure. I wanted to play like something like that.
A little bit more eccentric or
yeah,
lush, like, a little more lush.
More notes, please, yes. And thank you. And so I got that chord, and I went home and I got lost for 8 hours wow. in it, where I was trying to comp and play a rhythm and sing at the same time, and I realized it was all difficult at first. Yeah. But then I looked up and I was like, oh my God, 8 hours went by. So I knew I had found something that was like a world that I wanted to live in.
Something you could put energy into.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. And it was super fun. And then I started to do little gigs and stuff. But growing up, I heard a lot of soul. I heard a lot of singing. My family was all musical. And then when I was like a senior, or right out of high school, I heard Kind of Blue. I heard Miles Davis, Kind of Blue. Okay. And that just changed everything. I was at a party. We were drinking beers. You know, everyone, it was all this different music was on the stereo, but then this record went on, and I remember I was totally, I just stopped.
Wow.
I left the party and I just sat in front of the stereo and was like, what is this? And I think that's true for a lot of people with that record.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like the gateway drug to jazz, sure, right? If you get that record, then you're,
yes.
Yeah.
There's a lot of essential things to hook you in. Mm. You walk into this new, kind of labyrinth of rooms. And I don't know where you come out. I think a lot of the space, you know?
I mean, Miles and a lot of these great, great, great players, you know, playing from bebop to all these different styles, but really like shredding and playing all these notes. But kind of blue, there's this like, just so much emotion. I mean, it always makes me like cry. I mean, Flamenco Sketch is like, oh my God. Yeah. Every time I saw it, I'm just driving and I can't stop.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? But so that was when I got really interested in that. And at the time I had a boyfriend who was a drummer, and he saw that I liked that music, and he bought me a box set of Sarah Vaughan, Ella Fitzgerald, Nina Simone, a couple other like jazz vocalists. And I listened to Ella and I listened to the phrasing and stuff. And I just didn't hear anybody on the radio at the time or in that had a low voice like mine.
Yeah.
And I could sing along with that. And I just was singing along with it. I remember my mom was like, "You like this stuff?" And I said, "Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, listen to it. It's so neat. Like these old, you know."
Yeah.
I mean, tunes that were written by like Gershwin and Cole Porter, they're like, they so stand the test of time. Like I'll play a gig and say it's like a 3-hour gig and I do my originals, but then I throw in some favorite standards.
Yeah.
Those tunes are so cool.
They are amazing.
They're cool. Yeah. The lyrics, like I sing Anything Goes, or like, in olden days, a glimpse of stocking was looked on as something shocking. Now, heaven knows, anything goes. It's like, think about the world today. It's like, anything goes. And those, it's like 100 years old, that song.
Still relevant.
It's crazy. So that really stands to me in my mind. That's why getting into jazz and learning jazz tunes were probably the greatest thing as a musician. Anybody who's listening, right?
Mm-hmm.
And as a musician and wants to learn more and expand their own songwriting or their own vocabulary, learning jazz, I think, is like one of the greatest things you could do for a musician.
And it's kind of endless.
I'm never, ever gonna be there. I'm never gonna be there. But it is cool where like we just finished this rehearsal and this is the band for the choir, right? And we all met under the for the purpose of helping our brothers and sisters that are on the street.
Right.
So it wasn't so much about like where we were musically. It was just like, let's just come together and be together.
Right.
Now we're working at the details of like comping patterns and solos and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the pianist Nina, she's used to playing a certain way, and I'm like, well, why do you try comping this way and singing? She's like, that's so freaking hard. And it's like, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But then I realized, wow, like all this time you spend working on these tunes,
sure,
to have the interdependence of a cool comping pattern, and you're still singing something else.
Yeah,
it's like
all in one person too.
Yeah,
that's the tough part.
It's all like rubbing your head
over top of somebody else is one thing.
Yeah.
Well, when you say that, I think of Errol Garner and how he comped and then did these lines and stuff in this weird offset loping kind of feel while still comping straight ahead on his left hand and doing it at the same time.
So when you say like, or we were saying like, yeah, you're never done. It's like, yeah, I'll never ever have that all done. I mean, I listen to like somebody like Esperanza Spalding.
Yeah.
I mean, that stuff's wicked. Or very cool. Very cool to have that ability to like just be rocking and so in the pocket there and then even be out, you know, and still be singing something.
Two different instruments. Mm-hmm. It's remarkable. It is I think you have to have a natural talent to start.
Mm.
And then you have to work it. You have to develop it. So it's a combination of having something inside you that hears it, and then wants to figure it out. You know,
I agree. I mean, whenever I'm around a musician that's like the whole band, right? That's a great singer and a great musician, and they're doing all these parts. You can just tell when you're around them, they just hear it all.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like Jacob Collier, you know that kid, Jacob.
Yes, Jacob Collier. Yeah, I kind of saw him, a friend of mine showed me him on the internet a year or two ago, and then he was in Vancouver at the jazz festival just like a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. It's wonderful,
lots we can talk about
there. I know.
I have another musical question. You've maybe touched a little bit on it, but listening to you singing some of these songs, I've heard you sing some more contemporary stuff, some maybe some of your own tunes that you've written, and then some of these standards you were talking about, like that the one in Moody. Yeah. I don't know if I'd ever heard it before. I saw you sing it.
Moody's Mood.
Moody's Mood, yeah.
Yeah.
Great tune.
Yeah.
But your vocal styling, your lines are they're not simple lines. You've got a lot of dynamics in your volume, your tone, your pitch, the rhythm. Do you work out those lines, or do they just come out when you're singing?
Sometimes I'm working out a line with my playing. I was almost going to demonstrate where, like, maybe I'm playing a line that's going down, like, and I'm going to go sing something opposite, but I want to make sure all the notes match. So I'll like hunker down and make sure that that works together, but then I kind of memorize it, or I just, it becomes natural inside, right? And then when I have that, a really good feeling, I think, then I'm going off of that idea when I'm performing live, you know? But I don't read music. And I read like chord charts, and I know what's in the chord. I know what notes are in it, and the different qualities of chords and stuff.
Guitar chord charts.
Yeah. But as far as reading notes, that's what stumped me in school. I think was because I really wanted to rock out at like 9 or 10, and I was like, "What do you mean I got to play Mary Had a Little Lamb?" And I couldn't even get with it, you know. That's knowing scales and knowing like the, you know, singing like Jacob Collier is really cool. I was watching a little interview of him, and he was just backstage singing all the notes of like an A minor 11. And he just sang did the whole arpeggio. He arpeggiated the whole chord. And I think that, you know, I have that really, I think pretty strongly around each chord that I'm playing. So, yeah, then you're just having fun, you know, then you can.
Right. So that's interesting. You, as I would have expected, you couldn't sing the lines you sing without really having at least a very good ear and have run through the chords that you're singing over, because all your notes are correct and interesting. They, you know, and some people just have the gift of improvising because they've heard it all. But you definitely have, there's intention there, and you know that you thought about.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in the room. There's a lot going on with the players. There's a lot happening in my life in that day.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm totally using that moment to listen to what everybody else is doing, and then, you know, what comes to you? What's the inspiration?
Right.
And then how does that like sit in the groove, or how do I want to express that?
Right.
I mean. Yeah, it's so weird. I mean, and also there's nights where you improvise and you're just like, oh my God, I did what? That was terrible. Or you're, you just, you know, you let it go because you know, but I think just trying, just like going at it with confidence and going about it like, you know, yeah, I'm going to express myself this way and I'm going to choose these notes and tell this part of my feeling, you know.
Somebody put a interesting post out on Facebook the other day, a musical acquaintance, and I have to go back and find it again because it was not something entirely new to me, but it was just something that you don't hear said as much. And really, essentially, what it was you need to be brave and you need to take risks and you need to forget. You need to just forget about your technique and
feel.
Go out there and take risks.
Yeah,
you know, there was something about what jazz is, or you know, there's something about jazz in particular, the improvisational aspect of it, that requires you to forget about your chops and what you're working on and go off the reservation, essentially. Be brave. And I can see that you do that as well. That's
there's so much like practice time that goes in to you to be to get to the point where you can let it all go and just be in the moment and feeling the music.
Yes.
It's many hours.
It's a yin and a yang thing. You have to do all that hard work,
mm-hmm.
but then you also have to be able
to have fun. I mean, you do the hard work so that you can have fun and not even think about it.
Yeah.
I mean, I in Southern California, I play with like some of the greatest rhythm section. I rotate between Richard Sellers, this drummer, and Duncan Moore, and they're great, great, great drummers. I mean, they've got like I think they're late 50s or 60 or, you know, wow. So they've got so many years of experience. And then my husband, Rob Thorson, who plays upright bass, or if he can't do the gig, then I sub it out with a couple other bass players. And I'm basically, like the other night, I had this little casual gig and I was like, I can't believe this is who I get to work it out with.
Yeah.
But if you've practiced and you've woodshed and you've done all your you know stuff before the gig, then you can go have fun,
right?
And you can play with each other, really play.
Yeah, well said. I had a trick question, and I let you see the trick question, and the question is, what's your best instrument? What's your favorite instrument? Or put another way, singing or guitar, which one would you choose?
I mean, the combo of the two of them, getting to put the groove where I want and play the chord and the voicing I want under what I'm singing is great. I mean, that makes me super happy. The combination of the two, it's just like my own little world, and I really, really enjoy it. Singing, though, I think is probably like the stronger of my instruments, because I think it's well, we all have this individual sound, this unique sound, and I mean, singing and drumming is like some of the oldest. That's the first. That's it, right? So getting to sing, and then my voice is lower, and I have like a kind of frequency that sounds like there's a couple other voices, maybe with me, And actually, I met this like psychic lady one time, this healer lady, and she had never heard me sing before. And she said that my voice was being used kind of like from another side, like to kind of turn it on in the audience for people to hear and feel it. So I feel like it just has this potential to grab more people just when I start singing. And people, I see people kind of like, oh, they kind of relax, you know?
Yes.
Sometimes the singer, you know, the mic gets set up, the band gets set up, and already they're like, can you turn down? Or they get all nervous about what's about to happen. But I notice that when I play my first chord and I start singing, it's soft. It's got a soft ease on them. And so they just kind of, they can relax. And that's a nice, but I think that's my voice. I think it's my singing.
Your voice gives you the strongest connection with other people. You connect with people through that.
Yeah.
You express through your voice.
Yeah, and I'm a really big, I love to express myself and to connect with people.
You have a big personality, yeah.
Yeah.
And a warm personality.
Good.
Which comes through without having to meet you personally. It definitely comes through in the music, which to me is what is harder to find, actually. There are a lot of talented people, these kids maybe you didn't think you could keep up with back in grade 9 or whatever, who were reading and could calmly go through conservatory books. There are a lot of people with great technical skills out there, even professionals out there working, playing. What is less common are the people that have the big personalities, who can really express and step outside of the technical constraints of the music and actually reach people emotionally. That's and have a vocabulary.
I think it's, you know? My life purpose and my journey and figuring out what I'm doing here is the most, that's paramount. That's what I'm here to do, is to be here for the people. And it's really all about the people.
Yes.
Because there's going to be tons more disasters and our resources will go away and it's going to be us together. So I know, I understand people that are technically, I mean, they're so great, right? But they have a little aversion to being considered a performer or being too engaged with people. They're their own kind of private Idaho, you know, they're like, I play my gig and then I leave.
Yeah.
But I really see it as my purpose and an opportunity to remind us of our oneness, the connections, the similarity, our commonality, the things we have in common is so important, because I see a lot of people just doing their own thing and maybe not even aware that they're not awake or they're not enjoying it. Right.
Yes.
I mean, I used to have my day job was working at a bank, which is,
we need bankers.
We need people that, you know, take our deposits and give us car loans and all that stuff. But I definitely, I felt like I couldn't really be myself in that environment, obviously. And, I was always getting in trouble because people would want to sit at my desk and talk to me for too long. Like customers would come in and they'd be like, you know, get them out of here. Like go do more loans or go do. And I was like, yeah, but they want to hang out and let's hang out.
Sure.
So music is it's like, welcome to my living room. You know, it's like, welcome to my home. And I see that all as like this, the soundtrack to that. And so people can get into it and I can love them. Mm-hmm. I can be loving towards them and then I'm loving myself and they'll love themselves.
Right.
And then it's like all this beauty happens from that. You know?
There's you're unified and you're in harmony with yourself and therefore you can be in harmony with other people.
Yeah, and it's amazing, you know, when you feel better. I have a song that I wrote, Feel Better. Feel Better, Get Better. Like when I feel better and I keep getting better, you know, that frequency, it upshifts everybody. I mean, everybody's feeling like, oh, they're on the train.
That's
good,
because right.
I felt it too. You know, I've been around people that were, before Ravi Shankar passed away, he was living in North County in San Diego, and my old bandmates, they would work with him really closely, and I only met him a couple times, but like his vibe and his heart and his love of life and humans and just, I mean, I'll never forget the vibe that he had, right?
Yeah,
or
yeah,
when you
yeah.
know when you're around like certain people and you're like, yeah. wow, you're like,
yeah.
that feels good.
Yeah, yeah.
So I always wanted that. I always wanted that, not for my music or for anything else. I just wanted to feel peace and feel good in my life, you know,
and
heal myself.
Banking yeah. 8 hours a day didn't do that for you.
You know, no, that didn't, because gosh, it was just a lot of clocking in and squabbling and you know, I loved being of service. I liked helping people, you know, but I just, no, that wasn't my
that.
Journey.
Yeah.
I don't think that was my.
It wasn't your calling.
But I did learn a lot. I
yes.
mean, I learned how to budget. I learned how to manage my time. I learned how to represent myself and talk to all sorts of, you know, socioeconomic background type folks,
right?
I mean, I hang out with the choir. I'm in someone's tent. I mean, we're in a home. I mean, in the same day, I'll be like hanging out with somebody in their belongings on the street. And then that night I'm playing in a $10 million home, like in Rancho Santa Fe for like people that are, it's like a bridge. I love
yes.
people and I like being a bridge and getting to see it all. And
yeah, it's really interesting. The intersection of music and some of these bigger
mm-hmm.
questions, more substantive issues of our time, like rising inequality.
Well, it's like the 60s. I mean, this
yeah.
is really what's happening. And I had this great conversation. I was in Iowa just recently visiting my grandma, and I went on a bike trip with this guy who we got in this big conversation about politics and stuff and what's going on. And I said, so, and he's a conservative, but he's like, I don't really identify with conservatives anymore. And, you know, it was all this, you know, I said, so what do you think? You know, here I am a pretty, you know, I'm an activist. I'm progressive. I mean, I believe in community and our world does better if we take care of the marginalized, if we
yes.
take care of the people that are literally dying in your street. If you let that gap, if that gap of inequality grows, then what happens to this world? I mean,
right.
we're going to be cruising around with like bulletproof windows. And I mean, it's not a good idea.
you don't need to be a genius to extrapolate from the trends. You know, it's here now. I mean, that problem is here now. So,
but he was saying like, he's like, I feel like the artists really have this role, and I feel it. I don't know that our choir would have gone national. I don't know that we would have had so much exposure had it not been, like, so needed,
yes.
you know?
Yeah.
And people coming to the choir or people coming to protests. And then people have their ideas of protesting and stuff. And it's like, have you been to one? They're really peaceful. I mean, it's like you show up with all these people that share your values, you know? There's no violence, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
So we're creating a nonviolent reality. And that's accepting of all. And it's not that far-fetched. Because when I look at the choir, okay, like the songs that I write are about oneness and love and all that. And that's beauty and that's beautiful. And people can dig that in the audience, you know. But when I'm performing with a choir, nothing's lost. Like they actually see our love on the stage, right? Like me singing with like a group of 40, 50 people. And these people who've, you know, just been reacquainted to their life's purpose. the energy that comes from the stage is like so palpable.
Yes.
The audience members are like, they're so choked up, and it, so it wakes everybody up. It feels really good. So yes, I've been writing these songs about what I feel in my heart, but I've never gotten to really like really give it to the audience the way I want to, like with this choir and this right. musical configuration is cool. But it influences the writing and everything now. It's all this big joyride, really. I mean, I say it all the time. I can't believe it. I cannot believe that I've eked out a little journey for myself where my job is to like get better at guitar playing and to play gigs, play shows. And I split up my time and I, you know, try to help others if I can.
That's fantastic. I mean, that is...
It's like a dream.
That's a great story.
It's
that's
a dream
fantastic
come true.
Story. So, on that note, then, what is next going forward? It sounds like you've got some big projects.
There is a few big projects. There's one project that I'm really excited about that involves mostly female musicians. It's called Women's Work. I don't know if you saw it on my website.
I believe I did.
Yeah, so that has these two musicians that I've met from the East Coast. Shauna Tucker, who's a cellist who sings and writes songs. She was working on a Cirque du Soleil show in Vegas, and she was working on Ka for like 5 years, and now she's taken a break from that, and she's just doing her own original thing. Shirazette Tinnen, this drummer out of New York,
mm-hmm.
she's so good. She's like just plays so many different styles, and she's wonderful to watch on stage. And we had this concert in Pasadena like maybe 3 months ago, and we loved it. We all had a great time because back to this whole concept of women creating communities and this, you know, the old idea women are catty and they don't like each other and they're all whatever. This doesn't exist. It's not really there. We really see our music as a or our art or our abilities as a way to just give and grow together. So I said, okay, we got to do this again. And I asked our friend Melanie Grinnell, one of my piano players out here in San Diego, who's fantastic, Melanie Grinnell to join us. So, and then Rob, my husband, he was like, you sure you want me in the women's band? And I said, yeah, you're in there. You can fit in there.
That's a nice touch.
That's a nice touch. Yeah. We're going to call it like the ladies plus Rob or something like that.
Yeah.
But so anyways, that we're having our first concert, the premiere of that show in Los Angeles. On the 21st of this month of July, and that's at the World Stage, which is really exciting. So we're all bringing in each other's music, and we're gonna do a few tunes of each person, and basically like that's the other example of, you know, what I feel, right? Here's a diverse band, you know, African American, Hispanic, myself, white. I think she's Filipino. Yeah, Melanie. And Robbie, we got a Norwegian, Robbie. And like, so that's important to show like an audience, I think too, you know? So anyways, but besides all that, it's fun. I mean, the music is really great. So we have these two shows coming up in July, and then we're going to do those on the East Coast as well. So it's just like this cool, fun, you know, women coming together, playing their music and also like connecting these two coasts and styles. So that's coming up, and that's like a, you know, in addition to my own tour dates with my band. So normally I travel as a trio.
Yes.
And that we don't have any, because the choir kind of took over everything. So I didn't book any. I haven't really been out on the road touring for the past like year or year and a half. But we'll do these dates with the Women's Work. And then Rob and I are going to Europe for the first time in October.
Excellent.
And so it's kind of like a vacation because we got married. So we're going to have a little honeymoon.
Nice.
But we also have music contacts there. So it's kind of our first journey to the, you know,
excellent.
To Europe, which will be really cool.
Excellent.
So I'm really hopeful. And then I'm working on a book to come out. We just finished filming a documentary that'll come out next year. So I want a book. And then Taylor Guitar sponsors the choir, so they want to help us get in the studio. So if we can have, I want to get the choir set up so that there's, you know, for the nonprofit, that there's some like revenue that
yes.
can come in to kind of keep support, because we've hired a social worker. I've got these people I pay. So
wow.
It's like, I mean, not just me. I mean, it's like all of us like working
yeah.
together for this mission. But
you have to get one of those big commercial banks to sponsor
yeah.
it through
yeah.
their charitable operations.
Well,
yeah.
the cool thing is that I have so many relationships in Southern California that, you know, there's a lot of businesses and banks and people that like really support.
I think that's part of that's going to be part of the ingredients. That's part of the serendipity that you're
mm-hmm.
experiencing, is that banking experience will come in handy.
Yes, yeah.
In more, maybe more ways than you might have thought.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's no knock here to anybody working in the financial world at all. You know, we need it all. But I think next year, I have no idea, Keith, what's coming. Because when our story, just the news story, the 4.5-minute news story went national on NPR, and that went all over the U.S., right? So that's just public, you know. So public radio, I'm just kind of coming up for air from that. And that was like 6 months ago.
What about Oprah?
Well, I mean, who knows what, you know. Yeah, I don't know what's coming next year. So I'm really open. I think another part of this is that my health is good. I take care of my health. I stay rested. I bike a lot. I swim in the ocean. I have a little list that I wrote. Here, let me read it. Hold on. I had to write this list because you get... I think you get distracted with everything as things kind of boil up. So I made myself a little, list to make sure I do this every day, which is like I write, I bike, I practice, I meditate, and I create, just creating either art or music that has no intention of it being like the finished final product, because we're always working on stuff to make it a certain level of good.
Yes.
So anyway, so there's I think mostly it's just when you're coming up, you know, I've been playing for like maybe 16 years. So when you're coming up, you're like, where's my audience? Where do I get the gigs? What do I do? Now I feel like, okay, I have an audience. Now I have this journey that's growing, it's going. So it's like, okay, take care of your health, take care of yourself, and, you know, stay inspired.
Yeah.
And what, you know, what's the message
Think
you have?
About what you're going to give to that
audience.
Yeah,
exactly. Right? Yeah. And practice and make sure you're not letting that. So there's a lot to kind of juggle and keep up. So sometimes it's just the juggling. But
we'll have to get you to Vancouver before you get too booked.
I would love to go to Vancouver. I heard there's like a great scene.
Have you been
Vancouver.
There before?
I've never been there, but I've heard it's great.
It is, and we can talk offline about
that
possibility, because it would be great to get you up to Vancouver.
And the cool thing too is, like, you know, I mean, Rob and I love to travel together. We love, obviously, we're together, we love to play, but sometimes he's really busy with his educational stuff he does, and I can just fly to a city and I can pick up a, you know, rhythm section and hit that way, which is nice too.
Yeah.
But so anyway, so I'm ready. My bags are packed.
We'll make it happen.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate your time. It's been a fantastic conversation.
Yeah.
And
thank
exciting
you,
to
Keith.
Hear about the new developments for you.
Yeah. It's cool, right? It's like,
absolutely,
the world I believe in and see that I want to be a part of and create is I'm getting to partaking the creation of it, you know? That feels great.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.